Chapter 14. The Fall of Locos. 000.M31. Locos, Olympia. Locos was unassailable from three sides. Only to the northeast, where the mountain the city dominated was joined to its sister peaks by a long, hump-backed stretch of bare rock, was it vulnerable, and then only just. This was the Cephalon Ridge. The ascension road to the south of the city had been blown. Fresh cliffs of pale bedrock scarred the mountain there. Never in Locos's history had so drastic an action been undertaken. To repair the ascension road might prove an impossible task. It would certainly be ruinously expensive. In destroying its link to the outside world, Locos had all but admitted it was doomed. The Triarchs stood some way away from the Lord of Iron. His mood had become blacker as the reconquest progressed, and he brooked no company but his own. Awaiting his orders, but commanded away from his presence, the Triarchs were stranded in the space between action and inaction. Behind them loomed the giant guns of the Stor Bezashk. To the fore was the ruined valley of Arkandia. On the other side, the city and its last remaining approach of the Cephalon Ridge.
"They are dead, and they know it," said Golg.
His superior smile had become fixed onto his face in recent days, as if burned into his skin.
"Their defiance is admirable," said Harkor, "but meaningless."
"What would you do in their position?" asked Forex. "Murder your own children?"
Harkor smirked and turned to the other Triarch.
"Golg, I do not think Forex has yet come to terms with this war."
Forex left the barb unanswered.
"They have a strong position. They do not need to give up."
"They cannot win," said Harkor.
"They will make us bleed for our victory," said Forex. "They know it, we know it."
"That will not stop the assault," said Harkor.
Forex's gaze drifted across the long, deadly ground of the ridge. It resembled the sloping back of a monstrous saurian. At either end, the ridge swelled outwards in a series of rounded bluffs, separated by nearly vertical short valleys. At these points, the way to Locos was several hundred metres across, although to either side the slope quickly became difficult, with bare, treacherous rock dropping suddenly into precipices. In the middle, the ridge was a knife edge a dozen metres across. A narrow road ran along the ridge full length. In ancient times, it had broken into a series of drover's tracks that led onto the mountain slopes, for the ridge away from Locos had ended in a glen walled by high cliffs that went nowhere. A tunnel had been carved through almost 5 kilometres of mountain under Perturabo's supervision after his wars were done, leading out towards the Delapon Valley and the way there to Cardis. The ridge had been phenomenally fortified, even before Perturabo had set his artful mind to its improvement. Since the days of the Hammer of Olympia, gatehouses of sloping, seamless metal had guarded each end, howdahs on the back of the saurian. The rock either side of the road had been smoothed to mirror finish, giving no purchase to the feet of would-be attackers. The middle of the ridge had been broken through, creating an artificial chasm 150 metres deep. It was crossable only by a drawbridge, and that had been cast down by the defenders of Locos and lay bent 600 metres beneath the foundations of the towers. Golg began pacing back and forth. Forex drifted forward towards the edge of the cliff, wishing to be away from Harkor. Legend had it that it was close to their current position that Perturabo had been found and granted his first sight of Locos. What a different view he must have had then. The mountain had been mutilated. The fertile valley of Arkandia smouldered, the hamlets and the small towns along its length smoking still, and the dams were all broken. Where their waters had been were the only clean spaces in the valley. Everything else was black and ruined. Corpse smoke fouled the air. Perturabo stood some way off from his Triarchs, framed by the tendrils of smoke rising from all over Olympia. By their position, Forex knew the cities, but his brain was numbed by the slaughter, and when he tried to recall their names, they swam away from his mind like fish evading capture. There used to be fish in the mountain streams near his home, he suddenly remembered. He had not thought of that for over a century. The clarity of the memory took him aback. Small blue fish in the clear water. Perturabo spoke loudly, bringing him back to the present with a start.
Taramino! Bring it down,
said Perturabo into his vox pickup. The guns of the store Bezashk boomed in rippled sequence. 1,000 shells hurtled skywards, arcing over the blackened valley of Arcandia to the walls of Lokos. Brilliant flashes preceded rolling clouds of fire. Pillars of stone dust erupted from the base of the walls, clouding the air. Only then did the noise of the impact roll out across the valley. Again the guns fired, then again, hurling thousands of tons of high-explosive ordnance at the city walls. Harkor came up behind Forex. The first captain felt he would never be free of him.
The walls are holding well, said Forex emotionlessly.
He was speaking only because he felt something should be said.
Of course. These walls were built by our lord himself, said Harkor. It is an interesting exercise, seeing our craft of destruction set against our craft of fortification. No fortress can stand forever, but it shall be a lesson to see how long before the walls collapse.
Forex glanced at their master. Perturabo said nothing. The Primarch watched his former home suffer the bombardment. The walls burst outwards, rumbling down the sides of the mountain in avalanches of shattered blocks. Weaponry exploded inside the bastions housing them. Rarely had Forex seen such a display, but it left him feeling empty inside. Soon the city was afire, and the walls crumbled. Only the Kefalon Ridge was left untouched. Already the grand battalions tasked with the ridge's assault were assembling in the quarry. Unthinkingly, Forex spoke his innermost thoughts aloud.
Such a waste of men, tearing down the city by hand. We should level it from space.
Harkor chuckled and rested a hand on Forex's pauldron. Forex tensed in his armour.
The Lord of Iron makes a point. What he raises up, he can bring down.
Forex gave Harkor a thin-eyed stare.
It is a lesson you should remember, brother, said Harkor.
To a signal neither of them heard, the assault force on the far side of the valley surged forwards. Their battle cries were diminished by distance, becoming pathetic-sounding. Sunlight winked from polished armour. Seconds later, explosions followed. Forex shrugged Harkor off and strode towards Perturabo purposefully. He'd be damned if he was going to stand around while Lokos fell. He was desperate to shake away his melancholy with action. The day was going to be long, whatever happened, and the night that followed never-ending. Fire and screams and smoke. Those were the constants in the equation of Fortridon's life, and their sum was death. Lokos was ablaze. Civilians ran madly from their rampaging sons. The Iron Warriors slaughtered everyone they came across. People flung themselves down, begging for life. They sought mercy, trusting to the bonds of kith and kin to stay the avenging hand of the Legiones Astartes. They found none. Even though Lokos was a city of old men, the genetically unsuitable, children and women, the Iron Warriors treated them all with the same ruthlessness. People were selected at random, lined up against walls and blown to pieces by volleys of mass reactive fire. Homes were torched while their inhabitants cowered inside. Fortridon hesitated before every shot and was relieved when his target scrambled out of sight or was slain by another warrior. Shamefully, he stopped shooting, waiting for Zancator or Fan to finish the deed for him. They worked their way into a square, away from the richer environs of the inner city, where the houses were small but well built. No matter their relative wealth or construction, they burned just as well. They reached the first house.
Fortridon, Kelophon, torch this one, move on, said Sergeant Zalsk.
Fortridon shattered the door with one blow from his armoured boot. Kelophon moved forwards briskly, his training kicking in, even though he fought defenceless townsfolk rather than deadly Xenos. At the threshold, he raised his flamer, then lowered it and looked within.
Get on with it,
said Zalsk. for Tridon went to Celophon's side to cover the modest room with his bolter. Possessions were scattered around the single room of the ground floor. It looked like breakfast preparations had begun when the attack started, and the inhabitants had fled. There, in three pieces, was a clay somi board, the flour to make the bread spilt over the floor. A doll lay face down on the rush matting. For all the vaunted promises of the Imperium, the lives of these people had not improved much. Seeing nothing inside, Fortridon asked, "Why do you hesitate, brother?"
"I grew up in a place like this," said Celophon quietly.
The pilot light of Celophon's flamer hissed. A savage twist snuffed it out, and he lowered his weapon's barrel to the floor.
"I will not do it," he said.
"What?"
said Zalsk, his voice grating and powerful through his vox grill.
"This is not right," said Celophon. "These people are not our enemies."
"Get on with it," said Zalsk grimly. "Our orders are to kill everyone, no survivors. An example is to be made."
"I will not," said Celophon.
"We have made enough of an example. This has to stop. Now."
"Get a move on, brother," ordered Zalsk.
"No," repeated Celophon. Slowly, so that none could mistake his actions as impulsive, he cast his weapon aside. The squad hesitated. Brother looked to brother.
"He's right. This is wrong," said Bardan. "You think so?" said Zancator.
He was tense, spoiling for a fight. He put down his bolter and drew his knife, his murderous instincts coming to the fore at the last. Zancator did not like easy deaths.
"What are you doing?"
said Zalsk. Something like panic was in his voice.
"I agree with Celophon,"
said Dentrefor. He went to stand with his brother.
"Do you think for a moment that the Primarch, having ordered the destruction of his own city, will thank you? You doom us all," said Zalsk.
"This never was his home," said Celophon. "We all pretended it was, even though he said again and again that it was not. But it was my home. The Legion has changed. This is not the way we are. Where is our mercy? Look to Fortridon. Do we want him to grow into his iron, thinking this is what we are? Callous monsters? From honour cometh iron!" Celophon held up his hand and swept it around him. Screaming citizens came to the entry of the street, saw the iron warriors and fled.
"Where is the honour in this? The Primarch has ordered it, so let it be done," said Zalsk. "His word is our command. Obey or die."
But the sergeant did not bring his bolter to bear.
"I hear the hesitation in you, Zalsk," said Celophon.
"Where are you from? Irex? Do you know what the 28th Grand Battalion did to Irex?"
"It does not matter," said Zancator. "None of it matters. This isn't about Olympia or the Emperor. It is about honour. By turning its back on us, Olympia shames us. The people of our world must be punished. If we do not do it, where will our honour be? Where our strength? We will be a laughingstock."
"Better that than monsters," replied Celophon. "What are we, Kurz's murderers?"
"Listen to Zancator," said Zalsk. "Move on. Forget this ever happened. We have orders. Perturabo will rebuild here. Olympia will live."
"How can you say that when the black smoke of corpse pyres smother the sun?" said Celophon. For Tridon looked around. Like Udemes, he was undecided, unattached from either of the two inimical groups taking shape in the squad.
"It is reasonable to have doubts, brother," said Zalsk. "But that is all this is." "I think it's gone beyond that," said Zancator with relish. "Our flame-handed warrior here has crossed a line. He has become a traitor to our lord."
The word traitor seemed to still the turbulent air of the city, drowning out the chaos of the sacking.
"He is as much of a traitor as the people of this city,"
continued Zancator, moving forwards, knife ready.
"What are you doing?"
said Zalsk.
"What needs to be done?"
said Zancator. With those words, he charged, crashing into Celophon as he was drawing his bolt pistol.
"Stop!" shouted Zalsk. "I order it!" "You are not fit to give orders!"
Dentrefor opened fire, felling Zalsk before he could react. Fan shot back, riddling Dentrefor's breastplate with smoking holes. He danced spastically as the mass reactive bolts destroyed his body inside his armour, dousing them all in sprays of his blood.
Bardam was on Fan then, smashing his bolter out of his hands and stabbing hard with his combat knife. Fan twisted aside. Metal scraped on metal as the knife gouged a long scratch in his ceramite armor. "Stop! Stop!" shouted Udamez in despair. He backed away as his brothers hacked each other down. He made a grab of Bardan to pull him back, then Fan, but they were half-hearted attempts, slowed by the knowledge that to arrest one was to take sides and doom the other. For Tridon had his gun up, wavering between the two battling pairs of iron warriors. Zancator had Kellaphon against the wall and was stabbing madly at his joints, trying to pierce the articulated metal and arming suit beneath. Kellaphon jammed the heel of his hand under the visor of Zancator's helmet, forcing it backwards. The two of them were locked together in a deadly impasse, neither of them able to break the other. Zancator grunted as he tried to bring his head back down. For Tridon looked from one to the other. The reek of smoke and blood seeping through his helmet's grill had him breathing hard. Perturabo had ordered this. The Hammer of Olympia, living up to his name one final time. For Tridon remembered when he was recruited, the chime of acceptance from the testing equipment proving that he was worthy. He remembered his mother's tears and the weeping of women as yet more sons were taken from their homes. He remembered growing up without brothers, without his father. He remembered pride. He remembered when he donned his battle plate for the first time and felt the honour of serving his Primarch. He remembered the might given to him as he fought and bested creatures from the depths of nightmare. That was the future he had been promised, and it had been delivered to him by Perturabo. He strode forwards, suddenly angry. Men like Kellaphon would take that away and leave humanity weak and divided. He raised his bolter and jammed it into the side of Kellaphon's helm. Zancator laughed horribly.
"Ah, Kellaphon! You always were weak!"
Kellaphon did not relent in his grip.
"What are you doing, boy? Can you not see this is not our way?"
For Tridon pressed the bolter harder into the side of Kellaphon's helmet.
"Iron within! Iron without!"
said For Tridon, and fired. Kellaphon's body hit the ground with a flat clang. Zancator kicked it. Bardan was badly wounded. Fan was dead. Udamez stood alone, seemingly in shock.
"Do not think I will forget this, Udamez," said Zancator.
"What about Bardan?"
said For Tridon. His head was swimming, and there was a buzzing in his ears.
"Leave him. If he lives, the Lord of Iron will deal with him."
Zancator sheathed his blade and retrieved his bolter.
"We have a city to burn,"